You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media.
The future is so bright. That's what this podcast is about, people.
Whichever way you want to think
it is. The future is so bright. That's really good, Beth. Way to start us off.
Yeah.
I like shades. It. Okay, we are doing a special episode today, and Betsy just found out that she was on video. Also, didn't you were singing the last time we were on the podcast recording?
No, that was me.
Oh, that was you.
No, I was talking smack that I was going to win a race. And then I spent that whole race freaking out that I'd like said it. And then I wasn't going to win, but then I won.
You won.
We just like to spring things
manifest.
On you.
Manifest.
Like,
oh, I know.
That was recording. Okay. So Christy and I have Betsy Welch and Michelle Duffy. Do you still go by Duffy or did you change to Smith?
I said I'd take Smith, but I haven't filed any paperwork yet. He's just so much cooler than Smith. I'm sorry. So we go by the Smuffies.
We have Snuffy with us today.
Yeah, Duffy is, I think, a superior last name.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. So we wanted to bring you ladies on so we could all have a conversation. This is the end of the year, looking back at 2022 and what has happened in gravel in 2022, specifically in the women's field, because we don't really care about the guys' gravel beef that much.
That's where most of the beef is, really.
This year it was, at least.
Yeah.
So I guess first of all, let's have y'all introduce yourselves. I know you've both been podcast guests in the past, but a real quick intro, kind of who you are and what you do. So we'll start with you, Michelle, or Smuffy.
I am Michelle Duffy Smith, and I am the marketing director at Lifetime for our athletic events. I've been here 5 years, and I live in Emporia, Kansas, thanks to Christy Moan's avid convincing of me to look at the housing market here. I'm a full-time resident.
Trying to do it with Betsy over there, but it isn't working.
Nope. Can't ski in Emporia.
That is a true statement. Sorry, Betsy, I interrupted your introduction.
I'm Betsy Welch, and I am a writer and reporter at Velo News / Outside. I cover gravel and a little bit of mountain biking and just generally whatever I find kind of interesting going on in the wide world of bicycles, including women's a little bit of women's road racing too.
Yeah, you covered awesome. A little women's road race this past year.
Little one, little big one. Yeah.
I think it's interesting because we really have, I mean, you know, we're here to talk about what 2022 brought to the table, in particular for women's cycling. I think it will be a little bit of interesting to have a little bit of dive into what we think 2023 might bring. But honestly, we've got two of the most influential women in the sport with us today, with Duffy kind of forging the way. With the Lifetime Grand Prix and then just all of Betsy's coverage of the sport, which has elevated it's just continued to elevate women's cycling. So I'm stoked to have you both here. Plus I get to call you friends, which is even, it's even freaking better.
I'm stoked to be here.
I think we all need some coffee. This is.
I know.
I was just typing. No, please don't judge my Starbucks pumpkin cream cold brew that I'm about to indulge on.
Oh wow, wow, Michelle.
I know it's really basic.
Okay, well, let's just start. Like, looking back at this year, what do you all think were some of the big the big wins for women in gravel or women cycling in general? And everybody, Christy, you get to answer things too.
I'm happy to start and, you know, just kind of what comes to mind first. And of course, I'm incredibly proud of the Lifetime Grand Prix that took place this year, but I think it's so much broader than that. It was just a piece of a much larger pie that we saw come to life this year. And I think that's like really starting to develop deep camaraderie between female participants, because there's become such an established racing circuit in North America, and it's kept a lot of talent here locally. And obviously there was a big, amazing thing that happened in Europe as well, which I'll get to, and I'm sure we'll discuss. But just in terms of the North American racing scene, which we are a part of, but watching that and how it's really become further established, even just in my five short, long years in the space, and seeing the depth of field really, really grow. And something that we heard over and over again and in our survey feedback from the inaugural year of the Grand Prix was the camaraderie that grew within the field. And that was really, really amazing for us to watch unfold and develop as the year went on.
Yeah. And I'll go a little off that. One thing that's been cool to see from like my side of the table is the women really begin to have a really deep dialogue about racing as women, about racing one another, about what they want the sport to look like, whether that looks like women's only races, whether it continues to look like mass starts, and how they've like recovered from, you know, whatever you want to call gravel beef, like the little flares of drama there have been in the women's peloton. How I just think the women have like set this incredible incredibly high standard of like how they behave in the world of this sport and stuff. And I just think that creates like a really deep, thoughtful and engaging conversation that is going to shape it. Like they're going to decide what they want to see the racing continue to look like. And I don't think it's necessarily like something that we can even predict. Like, I think it's this evolving thing that, you know, even a few years ago, you may have had the majority of people saying like, hell no, we would never think of a women's only race. Whereas now you like, it's something that, you know, people are entertaining. So it's been cool to see, like you said, Michelle, like a camaraderie and sort of like an openness among these professional women to chart the course of how they want things to look.
Yeah, I loved being at the finish line of Big Sugar. I was saying this before we started recording, and because I've been at some big finish lines in the last couple of years. And, you know, usually it's like this sprint with the guys and it's a super exciting finish for the men. And the men were kind of like, that were pretty spread out. So it was like one, and then the next one. So it was kind of like the women typically finish. And even like, you know, Paige solidly won that race, but there was also a race within the race going on, which was for the top steps at the Grand Prix. And that race was so exciting. And it was so fun to watch like seven women come across the finish line and like laid out on the ground, couldn't breathe because they put so much out there. And I haven't felt like I've ever seen that as much in women's racing. And so it was really fun to see like the level come up and what the competition can look like, but also how excited they were for each other in the finish shoot. And excited that they had worked together and accomplished that.
Yeah. Big Sugar was a cool race for the women on a lot of levels. We all heard a lot of the women say like, wow, I've never spent that much time racing with my female peers in a gravel race. And holy shit, that was so cool. So, I mean, for me as a journalist, like, God, that's, I wish all races were like that. It makes it like a much more interesting race report, you know, as you say. But,
and that's, I think that's kind of a byproduct of what's developed in opportunity here in the US and in North America, because the playing field is just getting deeper. And a couple of years ago, there might not have been 30 women at that level. And that's why it was more strung out. And now it's developed to the point where women are realizing that they're capable of riding with those that they've aspired to race with. And it's just really deep in the field of competition.
To live your healthiest life possible, you need to understand what's going on inside. Inside Tracker takes a personalized approach to health and longevity from the most trusted and relevant source, your body. Inside Tracker was created by experts in aging, genetics, and biometric data from Harvard, Tufts, and MIT. It provides personalized health analysis and clear recommendations, plus an action plan on how to live a longer, healthier life. Inside Tracker can also calculate your biological age, which is the rate you're aging compared to your chronological age, as well as ways to lower your biological age. The thing we love most about Inside Tracker is that they give you recommendations on things you can control to optimize your health, like food, supplements, workouts, and other lifestyle choices. And did you know that you can use your HSA, HRA, and FSA to buy any Inside Tracker plan? Which means you can purchase Inside Tracker using your tax-free dollars. Oh, and it gets better. For a limited time, you get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store when you sign up. So if you're ready to get a crystal clear picture of what's going on inside your body, along with the science-backed recommendations to optimize what's not working, visit insidetracker.com/feisty. That's insidetracker.com/feisty.
When you look back at this, and this is more kind of a question for Betsy, because the Grand Prix is obviously, or, you know, a lot of this is happening in America off-road. But you got to go see the Tour de France Femme in France. What was that? How does that compare to like what's going on in the gravel scene, in the off-road scene?
You know, it's interesting. Like it's, I'm not sure I'm going to answer this that well, because I haven't really thought about it that way. I mean, I was thinking a little bit about covering the two events. Like, it was cool to cover the Tour de France because it was like just this one race and it was only women. Whereas when I cover gravel, it's like I'm always covering two things. In terms of like the race reporting or whatever. And it was really cool at the tour to just be like, I don't have to like, you know, make sure I pay equal attention to men and women. Like, it's just this race. Like, how cool was that? But I mean, I will say, like, one of the things that I really appreciate about our off-road scene here is the fact that stuff like prize money, where it is applicable, it's not a question of whether it's equal. Like, it just is. And if you're not going to do equal prize money, like, forget it. You're going to get flayed on social media, you know. But at the Tour de France, the prize money is not equal at all. It's decidedly very unequal. So it's interesting because, like, on the one hand, you had this event that was elevating women, like the spotlight was on them. There was no men's race going on at the same time, but there's like all these old sort of like, I don't know, holdout inequalities built in. Whereas like over here, we are charting this new course where equality, we're trying to bake it into the structure of the thing itself. And that's really something we should be proud of, I think.
Yeah. I hope it has an influence. You know, I think about Unbound in particular and the growth of Unbound, where with having been involved with it for so long, you know, thinking I want this to be the Tour de France of the United States. So definitely had an influence. You know, it's had an influence on me and the way I think about racing bikes to some extent. I wonder if we can have that same influence back across the pond, where it's like, you know, where you should take a page out of our playbook and look at equality.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I've just, I wrote a story today about USA Cycling and sort of some of their ambitions in gravel. And that is an example where I believe if they are true to what they say, they are going to take the cues from the people who have been here for years. And so that's an example of like what you're saying, where like they're, it's going the other way. You know, it's not from the top down as it normally is. It's coming from the bottom, and it's
trickle. That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
I'm curious, and probably both of you see this, Michelle, you probably saw it through the Grand Prix, and then Betsy, obviously you see it with reporting, but we know that women still don't necessarily get like, well, they don't get equal sponsorship money, right? They don't get equal mm-hmm. attention from brands. And they don't get not any of the lifetime races, but other events that I followed this year. And they were like, oh yeah, we should cover the women's race too. And it started after the men finished, they were putting women on. And I'm like, you know, this happens every time. You know, you need two vehicles, one to cover the men's race and one to cover the women's race every time. You need, you know that. And so anyway, how do you think things are progressing for women as far as being able to make an actual living out of doing bike racing?
I think when you provide opportunity, then I think that follows, and there are opportunities being provided at this time. Unfortunately, unfortunately, I think requires a lot of hustle still in the off-road side. I mean, what other assets do you have besides being a good bike rider? And if you're shy and you don't want to put yourself, you know, we've talked a lot about this year, and you're not really vocal on social media, or you want to keep your private life private, you're almost penalized for that, because you're not just compensated for how well you can ride your bike. And so it's pushing, and I think in cycling in general, but I think you can look at other sports, individual sports, non-team sports, where this expectation is the same, is like, what more do you have to offer to my brand? And if there's more, then the compensation will follow. But hopefully things like the Lifetime Grand Prix and other series that are popping up are providing the opportunity for riders to prove their worth. And I think that comes back onto the race organizers. And I'm just speaking for the responsibility that I feel, is like, we have assets like social assets or video assets that we're creating. And so we have a responsibility of making sure that women are put forth on those platforms in the same capacity that their male competitors are, because even if they're the shy athlete, or even if they're developing and haven't had the opportunity to build a bigger brand for themselves, they still have the ability to say, well, I'm a part of this series and it's getting this much exposure. And then we're providing a platform for them to be able to basically go out and recruit sponsors to join them in. So I think there's definitely a responsibility on the race promoters, if they are looking to build something like we are trying to build with a Grand Prix. That's not every race promoter, mom and pop events, they don't necessarily need to take on that burden. But sitting in the seat that I am in, with a large corporation that's putting on a series that has a very sizable prize purse, I think there is responsibility from our perspective to make sure we're providing equal opportunity. And we plan for that. We plan for every single race, whether that's different vehicles, different team members, different, whatever that may be, timelines, to ensure that we're covering the men's and women's race as equal as we possibly can, whether they're intermixed or not. And that does require planning, time, effort, and resources. But again, that's a responsibility that we're wearing and shouldering as, you know, vocally trying to be a leader in the sport.
I'm curious, because I know, you know, we're sitting here talking about what all this has done for the professional side of women's cycling. But I also think there's a story that's happening just with your average Jane instead of Joe, I guess, rider out there. Like, is that, like, I feel that seeing these athletes are just, they're inspiring, other people, like young women, they're inspiring, you know, old women, like whatever. It's like they're just inspiring other people to get on the bike that are not necessarily going to be riding in the Tour de France or the Grand Prix series.
I think that's absolutely true. And I hear it like, I mean, I hear it even from like peripheral people in my life who are not from the bike part of my life, like old colleagues that I worked at the hospital with, or like, you know, girlfriends who don't ride, and they're inspired by, you know, whether it's like me or someone they watch on social media. And so I do believe that's happening. Cause like, if I'm hearing it, then, you know, you can imagine what Sturmey is doing, for example, for just people. But I do have a question to like lob back at you guys, cause this came up recently. A race promoter of a small new gravel race called me, and he was really, really wanted advice on how to make sure that he had a lot of women at the race. Like he really wanted to sort of target marketing or outreach to women and like have that be a focus of this race. And I get this question a lot, like, how can we get more women? How can we get more women? And I don't find it that easy to answer, because I think, well, I'm not sure there is one answer or even two or even three. And so I'm like curious what you guys think. You know, we've gotten, I think, to like this threshold where 30% is like a great, oh my God, we got 30% of women. And like, if we get 30, like we're doing pretty good. However, that's far from parity, right? Is parity still the ultimate goal? Why aren't we there? What if it's not reflective of, you know, just like there's all these questions that I have about that. And it, does that mean that we're not doing it right. Like that Lifetime isn't doing it right. That I'm not doing it right. You know, that like Unbound, like, or should we be celebrating something here? I'm just curious what you guys think.
I think we need to celebrate, first of all. I think we always need to be celebrating that. And I think having been doing this as long as I've been doing it, and especially to the call out to women, to really understanding it is just simply more difficult in a societal way for women to show up at start lines because of responsibilities and, you know, restrictions that are just there from a society perspective. And so I think that the valuable piece of it is to continuing to make sure that women feel welcome and safe. And I think we're getting way better at doing that just on a base-to-base level. And I think, you know, small races have taken cues from bigger races, and bigger races have taken cues from smaller races, and this whole, you know, kind of ecosystem that we have woven in together is making it happen. I don't know if we'll ever see a 50-50. I mean, I think you'll have races where there's 50-50 or there's more than that. I mean, you see it at Unbound with some of our smaller distances where we have more than 50% women showing up. So I think you have to just really consider the entire space and making sure, like I did like one thing I liked that Gravel Worlds did this year in their 1,000 mile or their 1,000 women initiative was really not just at the start line. You know, it was volunteers. It was like, you know, what's the ecosystem that's making up the ethos of an event. And for me, I think 30% is a great number. I think we could, you know, continue to edge that higher, but the 50-50 number seems like it's going to take a societal change, and that we'll see in 100 years. Like probably not maybe, my lifetime.
I mean, that's what happened in running, right? Like hardly any women, they couldn't run marathons. So then it was very small, but then they started creating like these groups and people would go together, and like they started doing like women's training programs and women's marathons. And I do think there are some things that promoters often overlook. Like have pictures of women on your website. Even saying like we're reserving spots for women, even if you don't fill them up, right? It sends us, or BIPOC athletes or non-binary, whatever it is, it sends us a message that you are welcome here and we're creating a space for you. Connecting with like teams or groups in the community, making sure you get a lot of pictures for social media. And the other big thing like this happened, because I get that question a lot too, Betsy, but like I got like 3 weeks in a I was like 3 days in a row or something, like people post them, you know, we have that big Facebook group and they're like, we don't have any women sign up for our race. And it was like the death race where everyone will die. And then the next day it was like the hardest race in all of America. And I'm like, I'm kind of seeing a pattern of why nobody's signing up for your race, you know, like, because women want to know they can complete something when they do it. And so if it's automatically branded, like you will die and you may not finish. I just don't know if that's going to be the most attractive thing.
Well, and it's interesting you enter to running first in your response, Catherine. That's what my background was prior to cycling. And that's where my head was going. And I'm always cautious of approaching it from this angle, because I think from a disciplinary perspective and a business perspective, we still need to always be trying to fight for parity and 50-50. And like, that has to be a goal, because we'll only increase female participation if we're fighting for, you know, that audience. In saying that, if you study consumer behavior and consumer interests and male versus female, like, and looking at the outdoor industry as a whole, sometimes I you have to step back and be like, well, okay, well, how are men and women engaging with the outdoors as a whole, stripping out events, like just in terms of activities that interest them. And, you know, the high adrenaline activities typically lean more male, and things like hiking, running, trail running are seeing more female participation numbers. And I think that correlates to like the Unbound 25 and 50, we're seeing more women participate. And I don't think that's because it's a shorter distance and they only feel capable of that. I think it's because it's something that either they can complete, they feel comfortable in. It's not this like Uber, you might die experience for them. Maybe they don't have as much time because they have a family, and so they can commit training for 50 miles, but 200 miles is like endurance junkie. Like, they're not quite interested in that. And I use like the Leadville Trail 100 mountain bike race as an example here, because every year we're like targeting women in our marketing and, you know, essentially accepting all the women that apply in the lottery. And we still can't eclipse like 15% registration from women. And I also think that's okay, because, well, it's not okay. We want to fight for more, but I don't think we should be so hard on ourselves, because if we look at our portfolio and like Silver Rush, for example, is another mountain bike event that it has a 15 mile, that 15 miler is like 70% women. So we are creating other opportunities for them to come and participate. And maybe that 15 mile participant is then inspired to do the 50 and then one day wants to tackle the 100.
Well, and I don't think it's fair to also, like, with that example too, Michelle's like, it's okay for us to not expect women to go, like, it's okay for them to find themselves at a start line where they're comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, there doesn't have to be a forced issue there.
Of, yeah.
You know, the 200, that was what the 200 women, 200 miles taught me, honestly. When I had friends calling up going, can I just do the 100 next year? Or will you still be my friend? I'm like, what? Yes, of course I'll be. So anyway, but yeah, it's an interesting question.
Sometimes I wonder if it's less, the numbers are less important than the approach, right? Like, you know, we need to do away with all that language, like bring the wife and kids for a fun week, you know, like that. It's like, okay.
More pictures of women in bikinis in your marketing.
Did somebody do that?
Oh yeah.
The same people that did the wife and kids.
Right? Okay. So yeah, we don't. That just like doesn't fly, you know. It's to me, it's like the thing, if there was ever to be an equal prize money, it's like you're irrelevant, sorry. Like, if so, it's like, yes, women in the marketing, women in the advertising, like yeah. And I do think because this scene is so sort of like community policed at this point, that most organizers are hip to that and actually generally care. Like, it's genuinely so. I don't think it's all a marketing thing at this point. No.
I think there's a culture shift that's happened, which I'm excited because I think that's where you make the real change. It can't be just a checkbox. It's literally like a, it's a shift.
Yeah. Well, that's why people are like, well, why do you talk about the pros, right? Like it's more about the everyday athlete. I'm like, but you need the stories and the people to look to. And like, I don't know, my little niece, she just got her, she's turning 7 in 2 weeks. And so she just got her a bike with gears and handbrakes. And I had showed her some videos of Kate Courtney earlier in the fall, when she was like kind of whining about riding her bike. I was like, well, look at what this girl can do on her bike. And she's like, oh, she's amazing. And so we went the day after Thanksgiving up to Bellevue and we're driving home and she goes, can I watch Kate Courtney reels on your phone? And for 45 minutes, she just watched Kate Courtney doing reels on my phone. Right. And so like, I hope she grows up in a world where she believes like, that's just what girls do. They shred down mountains. And she's excited about that. And so, you know, I think it doesn't matter if you want to go for a podium at a race or you just want to show up and like have a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all valid things. And one doesn't make the other less at an event.
The old, if you see it, you can be it is a real thing. It really is.
That one, the first time I had the best example of that was Gina Davis talking about archery. She was an archer. I guess she was even at the Olympics. And she was talking about how she went to her archery coach 1 year and he was just talking about how there had been this huge spike in girls signing up to take archery. And it was because of Katniss Everdeen and the Hunger Games. And it just was like, you know, this real aha moment of like, all you got to do is just let them see it. It's that simple, which is crazy because it's really not that hard. Ultimately, you just have to give the opportunity, right?
I think if you look at other individual sports and team sports, but when you look at those heroes and the influence that they have, I mean, look at gymnastics, a traditionally white upper crust sport in the United States. Mm-hmm. Every year, the team we were sending to the Olympics and World Championships was predominantly white females. And then it took a Simone Biles to change that. And then you look at the world gymnastics team this year, and it is such a diverse team of very qualified gymnasts because they saw it. They saw somebody else accomplishing those goals and they believe that they could do it too. And they had parents that loved and supported them along the journey. And gymnastics has become a much more diverse sport in the last 8 years. And I see that the same way we look at women or BIPOC in cycling as well. And that kind of comes back to whether that's media or event promoters or brands and who is in their ambassador list. Like, are you truly giving people someone to look to and see themselves in? And that doesn't just mean like gender and race. That's also, are you a working mom? Are you a, you know, recovering from injury? There's all of these really relatable little nuggets that someone looks to, and like, I see myself in that. And that could be the inspiration, Betsy, to your point, like former coworkers at the hospital, and they see what you're doing. And maybe, you know, a friend had been talking to them about it and they feel like they know someone that can accomplish those things. And it might encourage them. Like my mom, you know, was encouraged to go buy a bike and she had her Walmart brand bike, but she went and she bought a Specialized like hybrid bike, and her and my dad, like they used to just kind of like pitter patter around the neighborhood. And now they'll like go ride 15 miles and that's amazing. And that's just like, that's their, that's what's palatable for them. But it, someone close in their life, like helped inspire that. And that happens all the time, everywhere.
Well, what are we hoping for 2023? What do y'all want to see happen with women in cycling, like both at the pointy end and the everybody, I don't want to say everybody else, but the yeah, the whole spectrum of women's cycling. Weekend warriors makes me think of military people that do their weekend drill.
I mean, I want to see more women doing off the bike things in the bike world. Like, I want to have more female colleagues in journalism. I want to get more emails from women from brands. I think event promoters, like whatever it is, you know, this isn't just about people riding bikes. It's about like the whole ecosystem, if you will. And that was one of my favorite parts of the Tour de France Femme, was hanging out with all the other women journalists. It just felt like it was our show. And that was really cool. And it was interesting. It was like, I had this sort of ongoing conversation with myself, like, wow, this is so cool. This is a big deal. And then I'd be like, but wait, maybe it's not a big deal. Like, we're just journalists. We happen to be women. And so, you know, it's just like, it's, I think it is a big deal. And I think it's normal. Like, I think both can be true at the same time. What can't be true is that this will never be normal unless we normalize it. Like, we need to normalize women working in the bike industry. We need to normalize women racing bikes. Like, and, you know, we can still, it's still a big deal. And I think we can still call things out, but like, we just need to make it fucking normal. Like, I'll never forget this one old surly like bike racer from the 80s. Once I was talking to her for a story or something, and she's like, you know what we used to call Velo News, right? And I was like, no. And she's like, Velo News. She's like, it's good to see that they have a woman at Velo News. And it's like, damn right it is.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Did she take a drag off her cigarette when she was done? Velo News.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That's awesome.
But yeah. And I guess the last thing I'll say is, I think we who aren't professional athletes can sort of make a concerted effort all the time to elevate our peers in this industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I try and share other female journalist stories. You know, like, we don't need to be competitive here with each other. We really need to just support each other as we can, because we are still a minority.
I talk to all these people that are like in different brands all the time, and they're like, they're women working in the same role in a different brand. And I'm like, do you know so-and-so? And they've never met like that person. Cause they're like, we go to all these events, but we don't have time because we're just in our booth. And one woman said, you know, what happens is a lot of women in the industry feel isolated and alone. So then they end up leaving because they feel like they're the only ones, because they're the only ones in their company, but they don't see like there are all these other amazing women working there.
Yeah. At Sea Otter in the spring, I was blown away by, and again, I think you have to be, I think you do have to be a little conscientious. Like, we're still a minority. You do kind of have to seek other women out. But once you do, you're like, oh my God, we're actually here. We out here, as the kids say, yeah. You know? So that's how I felt at Sea Otter. At the Tour de France Femme, it was like, yeah, we out here and we're just going to sort of own it. And I think that's that, I guess that would be my answer to your question that you asked a few minutes ago, which is like, what do we want to see? Which is more just sort of like normalizing it, owning it, continuing to just like be the best we can be in all the arenas of cycling, and not really even accept that there is another way. Like, just make this the way. This mm-hmm. is the way.
I love that, because like that comment just forced me to reflect personally for a second. And I think that's something that even like myself in my position, just in the last like 2 years, maybe I felt really more comfortable I'm a grinder, I hustle behind the scenes, and I was okay with that for a few years. And thankfully I'm surrounded by like really amazing, strong women like Christy, or even our senior leadership team like Chemo, that just really have believed in me and encouraged me to like get out there and own the work that's been happening behind the scenes. And I didn't and don't, like, it's not a credit thing. It's more of a like, build those relationships, let people know that a lot of this work is being done by females behind the scenes. I mean, our team's actually is predominantly female, which is amazing. And that should have been normalized earlier. And so hopefully that trickles down to the rest of, our team and trickles across too, is like really owning the role, that we've had. And in something like the Grand Prix, for example, like opening it up, like this conversation up, I'm really proud of what we've created in the Grand Prix. And I'm really proud to have been a driving force in that, within the organization. And that's probably not something I would have said outwardly a year and a half ago, just because it felt like, oh no, I'm just delivering on somebody else's vision. And I think, you know, that shift in mentality, not just from the business perspective, but just as women in general, will really help normalize and we can create our army. And then just from the racing perspective, like participant to pro, I guess it's somewhat of the same, as creating that sense, that environment for a sense of belonging, continuing to hear women out. I don't think the industry has found the right answer for how the front pointy end of women's racing should look, at a start line. I also think that that's okay, as long as we're continuing to evaluate the events from a safety perspective, and two, ensuring that we're at least providing a platform to listen to women and what they want, and then making the best decision based on the race environment that we're trying to create and safety. So hopefully we can continue to have and evolve those conversations. And then I hope that some of the things that are happening in North American cycling, including the Grand Prix, continue to inspire the everyday participant, to believe that they're capable, and potentially see more Paige Onwellers. I know I've kind of latched on to that story, but I do just think like the opportunity and seeing the ability to provide someone the opportunity to believe they belong, whether that's just simply standing at the start line or participating amongst the elite field, is incredibly important. And providing that opportunity has resulted in someone that's now making a full-time career out of riding her bicycle. And I'd love to see a few more of those stories next year.
I love it. I love that most of my calls have female faces on them. So.
What about you, Christy?
I mean, I think I don't think I could say any more than what these two women have said. It's really all of that. I do think, you know, I know I've pushed Duffy to be who she is, like to own who she's being, who she is in the space, because she's doing some amazing work. And, a lot of that gets overlooked, and it's really, really, really easy. With my own personal experiences of letting men take the credit for the work that you're doing, and not like in a bad way, just in a way that we just are grinders. We just get the work done. So you don't think about it too much, but really it's important for us as women to make sure that not bragging about it, but making sure it's known, because that influences the next generation of women to know that that we are doing the work, and that you can, like, it's the whole see it and be it thing, is that if other young women don't know that Duffy's leading the charge on the Grand Prix, they don't understand that there's a space for women to do that. And so it's just, it all trickles down. It's the same, you know, from being on the bike to off the bike. We've got to make sure people are aware that they know what work is being done by who, and not, again, not for like bragging purposes, but just for the perspective of like leadership and future generations, because that's where the effective change happens and stays both.
I love all these answers. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in 2023. I think my biggest thing I want for people is just to step into whatever their dream is, right? Like, if you want to race elite, go for it. Maybe you're the last one that crosses in the elite field. Doesn't matter. you know, or if you want to go to your first event and finish 25 miles, do it. If you're like, I want to try that 200, step into it and believe in yourself. Right. And like the more women that take those steps and just go, this is a little uncomfortable, I don't know about it. And I think that's where we'll like really see amazing things in the next 5 years.
And also, grab a friend along the way. There's a lot of times that women, they may participate in something, from a hobby perspective together. They go on group rides together, but that friend may never have participated in an event before. And I think a lot of us know someone like that, and invite them to come along with you, like, mitigate the barriers, right? Like, let's drive to this event together. They have two distances. You should sign up for this smaller distance, like starting to break those barriers down and encouraging other people that they belong.
Well, thank you all so much for your time. And I hope that everybody has a great holiday season. This will probably come out one of our last episodes of the year. So we will see everybody in 2023.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.